I think there was this concept before the Second World War that women just really weren't intelligent enough. You know, women, they were too emotional and too focused on family and wanted to have children, and why waste an education on them? And right. The Second World War, women proved everyone wrong by quite often managing to do jobs better than the men who did them before.
Welcome to Historical Fiction Unpacked. I'm your host, Allison Treat. Hello, readers, and welcome back to the show. This is episode 10 of season 7, and today I'm sharing a conversation I had with Jennifer Ryan. You guys are going to love this interview today. Jennifer was a joy to talk to, and her novel, The Underground Library, is just fascinating. So I won't belabor this with any more details, but we'll get right to the conversation with Jennifer Ryan. Jennifer, thank you for joining me on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you. Your latest novel, The Underground Library, released on Tuesday. Can you tell me about this book?
Yeah, it's about a library that is thrown into jeopardy in the Second World War. It's a London library, and due to the Blitz, it's bombed into smithereens anyway. There's three very brave women who feature in the story who have these plans to take it underground in order to keep its survival.
Wow. So your writing is just stunning. And the premise of this novel is so intriguing. What inspired this novel?
All of my novels are inspired by research. So before I write, or in many ways before I even think about a new book, I'm just reading Second World War history all the time that is set in the UK. And it's really fascinating. I mean, honestly, you'd want to read this just for fun because of the detail and the characters and what people did, the bravery of these women is just astounding. And everyone was just putting it all on the line for the war. But particularly in the home front, you know, during the bombs, people were going out and working as driving ambulances through the bombs, as some of my characters do in the book. But there are a lot of heroic acts. It's one tale after another of these incredibly spirited, heartwarming stories of women quite often coming together to really try and help the war effort. So most of my ideas just come out of there. I come across different characters who are different things, and there's nothing quite like reality, I find, for setting historical fiction.
Yes, for sure. So tell me about the library that your underground library is based on. Was actually a real library, is that right?
That's right, yes. So Bethnal Green Library in East London is this very old historical building itself, actually. And it was bombed very early on in the Second World War. And the librarians got together and they found and they decided that it was so important to the community to keep this library going that they would take it down into the underground shelter, which was in the underground station at the time, the tube station. And this ended up being such an incredibly popular move that people would come, they would get the underground trains from all over London to Bethnal Green while the bombs were going on just to use the library.
Okay, wow. So once you discovered that story in your research, then how did you kind of build the characters and the story around that?
Well, I think a bit like all of my other, a lot of historical fiction, you read all these incredible stories about these different women, and you take a couple of these really great stories and you sort of patchwork them together a little bit. So I have the main librarian here is a woman called Juliet, and she is she's going through her own little torment. She comes from the countryside. She's got this big moment in London. Like a lot of women during the war, they found sudden job opportunities coming their way because all the men were on the front. So suddenly she was offered a job. Instead of being just a library assistant, she was offered the job as deputy librarian, which was a really big deal. Women just weren't offered jobs like that before the Second World War. And so she jumped at the chance, moved to London, and she's right in the middle of this story where suddenly her job, her wonderful new job that she is so excited about, is kind of in jeopardy because the library has just been bombed. And she is the forefront of trying to get it to move down under and into the underground library, into the underground station. So meanwhile, there's one of the other women, Sylvie, is a refugee, a Jewish refugee from Germany, who before the war came over with a domestic servant's visa. So this happened as in the run-up to the war. Everyone realized that the Jewish people in Eastern Europe, particularly, and in Germany, they really needed to help and assistance in getting visas to move to a different, a safer country. And one of the ways that there was a big humanitarian group, and they managed to persuade the government to open up, because there was a shortage of domestic servants, like housekeepers and cooks and maids, they said if one of these refugees gets secures a job and can prove that they secured a job in England somewhere, then they can get the visa in order to move over. But the problem was they were beholden to that particular family to keep their visa. So it raised an awful lot of problems, and there was quite a lot of, you know, abuse going on of this particular system as well. And quite a lot of women, like Sylvie herself, who's only 18, and quite a few women were just, they'd never been a servant in their entire life, and they were suddenly thrown into these very complicated, difficult, and exhausting situations. So I really wanted to cover that. And also there's a part in the book where Sylvie ends up being interned in a internment centre that is on an island off between the UK and Ireland. And that's a very interesting part of history that I don't think very many people know about.
No, yeah. So that you have... Juliet and Sylvie, and there's a third. Is there a third woman?
There is. So Katie is also very young. She's 18. She's in between school and college. She's a very bright girl. She managed to get into college. Once again, during the Second World War, the men were all at the front, and this opened up a certain amount of spaces in college for young women to become students, which before the Second World War was unusual. It did happen, but it was much more unusual. And I think this really opened the way forward for women to become more, for it to be more mainstream for women to be educated. I think there was this concept before the Second World War that women just really weren't able for it. They weren't really up for it and, you know, intelligent enough. You know, women, they were too emotional and too focused on family and wanted to have children, and why waste an education on them? And the Second World War, women proved everyone wrong by quite often managing to do jobs better than the men who did them before. So that's Katie. So she, but then she has this great big family drama, which I won't go into because I don't want to spoil it. But that really changes the direction of her story.
Okay, interesting. So then you have these three women, and what role does female friendship play in their story?
Well, hugely. I really wanted to involve a book club. in this whole story. And of course, because I belong to a book club and I just love it. There's nothing quite like discussing books that I think really brings people together and really into a very close-knit friendship group very quickly. And I thought about this, and I think it's because you end up talking about books and you talk about the different facets and the different things that happen in books. And before long, you're talking about your own experiences and other people are talking about theirs. And you're talking about other things that you've heard of or ways that you think the book might have been better or something. But basically, you're taking it beyond the usual conversation that you would have with friends, you know, talking about just everyday things. Suddenly you're talking about refugees or you're talking about women who lived 60 or 70 years ago and what it must have been like to be in the Second World War or in the First World War. And I think that really does knit everyone together. You really just get to know each other. And there's an element of trust there as well, I think, too. So these women, they get together and to talk about books, and they have this shared love of books. They have a love to discuss books and talk about their favorite books and everything. And I loved that element of the book personally. I love books that talk a lot about books and discuss various other books inside them. And I just had the best time. I have to say, there's something wonderful about really understanding a character so well that you can decide what is her favorite book, which character would she like best, which fictional character, and which male character might she be secretly in love with, and all these other different things. And I think it was so much fun to write that. And there's a special moment in the book where one of the women gives a child a copy of Little Women for her to read. And I love that concept of giving somebody a book to read. I always, especially a book that you know that they're going to just love. It's that sharing of a joy. And it's just a simple book. It's just something just very tangible that you can just take out of a bag and give to someone. And yet it can really be life-changing.
Yes, that's so true. That just reminded me, because I love the book Little Women, and so does my daughter. But recently she read Jane Eyre under duress, but I kind of forced her to. but I, like, she ended up loving it. And that's the kind of thing that I think you're talking about. It's like, we know that they're going to love it. We know that it's going to be, and I think it was life-changing, and the same for Little Women. So.
Yes.
What are some of the books that they read in this book club?
Well, Jane Eyre is one of them. Jane Eyre, oh. Wuthering Great. Heights, mm-hmm. Anna Karenina.
Okay.
Oh, goodness. What else? There's a lot of books that are touched upon rather than discussed in a big way. Okay. So I'd say there's probably a dozen or more titles that feature throughout. Yes.
Great. How did you, when you were researching, so you included a lot of real things, how did you balance facts versus fiction when you were putting this novel together?
That's a really good question. I've got a very strict rule about this, actually, is that if I've read something that something like that happened and it's close enough, then I think it can go in the book. But if I haven't heard of something like that happening, then it can't. I know it's quite a strict rule, but I just don't like just throwing things in when something like that did happen. Sometimes I slightly change the character that it happened to, or the type of character that it happened to, provided I think it's similar enough that, you know, that it works. So an example of this is actually in the Underground Library. There's one of the characters is in a situation where it's the middle of the night, there's been a bomb raid, there are some serious injuries, and there's a building has come down and collapsed, and there's a great gaping gap in the ground. It's like a crevice. Okay. And there is a man who is trapped at the bottom, maybe about 6 or 8 feet down through this crevice. Mm. And there's a group of men who are ARP people who are trying to sort through and trying to get help for this man. And they can't get down to him because the crevice is too narrow. And they see this woman coming along, one of the female ARP workers. And they, she's an ambulance driver. Anyway, and they say, "You're slim, we can put you down there." And so, and this is based on a real story, by the way. So she took off her outer garments and then they literally put her down head first, the crevice. And they gave her in her hand, they put a mask on her, a surgical mask. And then in one hand, they put a gauze that is full of a chloroform that would basically knock the man out. It was a humanitarian gesture so that he was out of pain because he was shouting like crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she went head first and they held her by the ankles and were leaning down. They had to lean down into the crevice. It was pitch dark. She had to hold the flashlight in her mouth. And she said the smell of it was really bad because this man had just basically been torn apart, and that included, you know. Anyway, so she put the gauze in front of his face and said a prayer, basically, because she said, "I didn't really know what to do." Yeah. And then she was hauled back up again, at which case she was just, you know, beyond upset and nauseous and everything.
Right.
But what a heroic thing to do. But
wow.
I remember when I read that, I just thought, well, if I put that in a novel, would anyone actually believe that it really happened? But it did. It was like a first-hand historical piece of writing that I read it in. It was just incredible. So actually, in the real text, she takes off everything down to her, like she was wearing like a slip underneath her skirt and jacket, and so she went all the way down to there in order to fit into this space. But I didn't do that in I wrote it because I thought no one would believe that. You know, no one would believe it. But she, I mean, honestly, the lengths that, you know, women, everyday women with quite often very little training would go to during the Blitz was incredible.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing to read the stories of what women did and what, you know, everybody was just going beyond, I think, what they would have thought they'd be capable of before put in that situation. So,
yeah, that's right.
So we talked a little bit before we started recording and you are from England. So has any of your own like heritage or experiences come out in this novel? Or I'm sure it was helpful being from England, writing about London, but.
That's right. Yeah, very much so. When I was growing up I grew up in South London, like the border between South London and the countryside. Okay. And when I was growing up, my grandma, the war was not that far away. I mean, people, particularly my grandmother, my wonderful grandmother, she used to talk about the war all the time, and people of that generation would. It was always referred to on the news or on the TV. You know, it was quite relatively recent history. And especially through my grandmother, I used to spend a lot of time with my grandmother, or she used to stay with us all the time. And she was this wonderful, jovial woman. And she used to tell these wonderful stories about the Second World War, and what she got up to and everything. It was a lot of freedom for young women during that time. And she, instead of being watched over and particularly by men and by her father, she was suddenly allowed, she moved to London in order to take a job there. And a lot of young women did this and found herself working, living in a boarding house with other women. And they were out dancing all the time and getting boyfriends and everything, getting up to no end of trouble, it seems. But there was this idea in the Second World War that you had to keep cheerful all the time. And people were really encouraged to make jokes and to tell jokes and funny stories. And I think that's why she had so many funny stories about the Second World War, was because that would be your conversation piece between other people, you know, and particularly if you're cheering up someone who had lost somebody or had somebody who was fighting and you were worried about them. You would cheer them up by trying to make them laugh or, you know, keep them cheerful. So that's what that was about. Anyway, so I always used to ask my mother, my grandmother, about the Second World War, and she was always full of stories. I think it's really useful. I think it's difficult for someone who's not British to get the cultural context of Britain during that time, particularly. And obviously the language, and it was a really interesting moment in time. I think there was a sociologist who once said that there's nothing like warfare to really create a moment of cultural transition within a nation. And that really, you can really see that happening in the Second World War. There was a massive shift, you know, all these women, particularly for women, women, instead of, as I said, having people watching over them all the time, suddenly had a lot of freedom. And they were able to mix with each other a lot more and form friendships a lot more than they would have been able to do. They were very much homebound before then, unless they worked. The jobs that they had would have been very limited to being a shop girl before you were married or being a domestic servant. So I think things before the Second World War were a lot harder than during, in a lot of ways. But then you obviously get other types of hardship as well.
Right. Okay. And it's interesting, you're talking about how they were encouraged to keep kind of cheerful and make jokes and things, because I feel the feeling I get from you when you talk about this book is one of almost like happiness because of the books we're talking about and things. But yet the events that happen in the book are not happy. And so would you describe this book as more hopeful or joyful or painful and difficult? How would you describe this novel?
So I think the word uplifting is what a lot of people would say, and heartwarming.
Okay.
I don't think they would say joyful. I don't think there's really joy in it so much as, this warmth and friendship and people overcoming difficult situations. And once again, there's this kind of very spirited bravery, this sense that, you know, we can change this, we can do our bit to make things better for a lot of people. That's really what this is a tale of, with a backdrop, obviously, of a lot of danger, really a lot of danger, a lot of heartbreak.
Of course. Yeah. So I believe, is this your fifth published novel?
It is. Yeah.
Okay. Right. I was counting and hoping I I got everything. Tell me a little bit about how you became a published author. Like, what did you do before that? And how did you, you know, have you always loved to write? How did this all come about, this career?
So I used to work in publishing. I was a publishing executive, a nonfiction publishing executive for many years in London. I was I used to be a nonfiction book editor, first of all, and then I became, yes, an executive. And I think there's nothing like when you're working in nonfiction, you always end up, as an editor, you always end up rewriting things a lot because the experts who write them, you know, they may not be very good at actually writing. They may be experts in their field, but that's great. That's what you need. You need the experts.
Yes. Right.
And so you end up rewriting a lot of things, and there's nothing quite like seeing your words in print. And I think that right from that, the word go, I thought, oh, I'd like to write a novel. I think it's because novels are so affecting as well. You know, there's, to be able to write something like that is wonderful. It's a wonderful thing to be able to do. So I think all of the writing experience that I had as a book editor really helped me to develop my skills as a writer. I think that's unequivocal, really, and really helpful to be able to just sit down and write well for long patches of time. So then I started studying fiction writing and became more serious about it. So then I decided to write the Chilbury Ladies Choir. And then it went a competition, and then I found a publisher, an agent and a publisher, which was great.
Oh, great. So that was your open door, was winning the competition.
It was. I think that was what, yes. I hadn't tried to see if it had any interest before then. So I'm not really sure, but I think so.
Okay, great. That's cool. So what are you working on next?
I'm working on a book that is in a slightly different era, so I'm not going to jinx myself and talk about it too much. Okay. But it's a very slightly different era, and it's really fun to do something a bit different. But it's, you know, I still love the Second World War, and I'm actually thinking about going back to the Second World War again after this. But it's lovely. Honestly, it's so much fun to do all the research and find out all about these different characters and work out how you can try to put across as much information and detail about the era as possible whilst getting in, you know, the human experiences, the drama, the relationships, the family life, all of that social history really that goes into my books. I think people read historical fiction in order to really feel genuinely part of that world. And I think that it's important to deliver something that is genuine and based on real stories and also very interesting and entertaining and just sort of explains, almost goes to explain how we got to where we are now.
Right. Well, and that almost answers the next question I was going to ask you, but I'll see if you have more to say about this. But how do you think learning about history through story helps us approach life in the present?
I think it's important to understand the past in order to like know where we are now and where we're going. I think particularly in the context of warfare, and as I said, this big cultural changes, I think that really plays a big part. When you think about women and women having more opportunities and having more say in how their lives are, then I think it's very important to like look at the Second World War as a big step in huge stepping stone in how we got to where we are now. Obviously, you would then look at the 1960s as well, I'd say, in the 1970s. But I think it's fascinating to see how all of these different steps lead to where we are now. And it gives some kind of indication about where we're going to go as well.
Right. Yeah. Well, Jennifer, this has been a great conversation. What is the best way for listeners to follow you?
So I think my website is lovely and it's very beautiful. I've got a lovely web designer who's done a great job. And that is www.jenniferryanbooks.com. But you can also follow me on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or X, now it's called.
Right, right.
But you can find all the details on my website.
Okay, great. That is where I will direct people in the show notes then. Thank you so much for being with us today. This has been wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been really fun talking to you.
Well, friends, wasn't that just such a fun conversation and just so much knowledge that Jennifer has to share with us. I do want to remind you to visit the show notes. If they're not in your listening app, you can find them at alisontreat.com/blog. That's alisontreat.com/blog. And there you can find links to Jennifer's books and to her website, as well as social media links. If you'd like to help out the show, you can do that by following, rating, reviewing, and also sharing this episode with someone who you think would enjoy it. Now I'm going to leave you with the words of Ovetta Culp Hobby, who said, "Women who stepped up were measured as citizens of the nation, not as women. This was a people's war, and everyone was in it." So keep reading historical fiction, my friends, and I will talk to you again next week.